Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. Oh, I'm so stuffed.
So
from all the giving so much thanks. What
are you grateful for this year?
Oh, that's nice. Well, I mean, obviously this show.
I mean,
what else
very
can I say?
True.
This is life changing.
Yep.
All our amazing fans that have been so dedicated to keeping in touch with us and sharing our episodes and giving us amazing feedback and suggestions. I mean, not to sound cheesy, but I am genuinely very grateful for this show and the community around it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's both
awesome.
Gratifying and flattering when
yeah.
people are like, first of all, I'm listening to your show, which is like,
that alone,
<you are>?
Right?
And then to be like, and I'm engaging with it in a variety of ways, is like, what? So
no,
cool.
That is truly awesome.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for that as well.
Yes.
I'm very grateful to be vaccinated.
Oh, God.
And able
yes.
to, like, go out again.
Seriously.
And do stuff.
Yes.
Feel a little less weird about it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I don't know. I'm grateful for normal shit, too. Just we have a house we can afford and...
Sure. Sure.
Not out in the cold.
All very important things to be grateful for.
I mean, especially with these episodes, as we're talking about some intense privations.
Yes, true.
And so this history has definitely made me very grateful for having multiple hoodies and
I know.
A pantry full of food.
I mean, it's a weird time to be alive, but oh, it could be a lot worse.
There were weirder times.
yeah, for sure. Hope everybody had some tasty food and some great friends and family that they were around,
right.
Or did your thing and said, screw it, I don't like Thanksgiving and I'm taking this day to myself. That's awesome too.
Or if you had a contentious Thanksgiving with some family members, I hope you won the fights.
Yeah. That's fair. Hope everyone had time to reflect on their many things to be grateful mm-hmm. for.
Yeah.
And I hope that you spent most of the dinner telling all your relatives, your neighbors, your uncles and aunts.
Yep.
I know you saw
mm-hmm.
about Ridiculous Romance and our part one Pocahontas story about Pocahontas and John Smith. and got them all excited for part two, which we're going to do now.
I kind of hope especially that you quoted all the gross things that the colonists ate during the starving time while you were seating yourselves for your delicious meal.
You're like, this one guy ate his own pregnant wife.
Pass the gravy, please.
Oh, time makes it funny, right? Or something like that. The distance.
Sometimes distance plus time equals jokes.
I think so.
I think that's the math.
Too soon.
I didn't take a lot of math classes,
right,
to be fair.
What's that? I think Mel Brooks said, tragedy is me cutting my finger. Comedy is you falling down an open sewer grate.
Yeah. He's
Which
brilliant.
Which is hilarious.
God,
that's so true. I mean, that's hilarious.
So true. Well, I'll tell you what isn't true. The story about Pocahontas and John Smith getting it on. Some point in the 1600s. That never happened, okay? And in part one of our Pocahontas two-parter, we debunked that popular myth about her being in love with John Smith and saving his life and all that crap. In actuality, Pocahontas was just a child. She only met John Smith a few times at most. And it's not certain that his life was ever in danger from the Powhatan tribes in the first place. But the story doesn't end there. Pocahontas marries twice. Once to a fellow native, Kokoam, and once to the colonist, John Rolfe. So what happened to Kokoam? How come John Rolfe isn't part of the myth of Pocahontas? I mean, what exactly happened here? Let's find out.
Yeah, let's go.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all. An abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
Okay, so remember, we mentioned in part one, but just to reiterate, that where we got this story came from a variety of sources, and pretty much the only indigenous source out there that we can find from the native people is a book called The True Story of Pocahontas, The Other Side of History. And that was by Dr. Linwood Little Bear Costello and Angela L. Daniel Silver Star. Mm-hmm. And this story is an oral tradition passed down from Pocahontas' own relatives. Mm-hmm. So it is a skewed and disputed version of the story. But when you're weighing it against what the English wrote down at the time, you realize that kind of both of them have told their own versions.
Yeah.
And you've got to kind of give a lot of credit to the people who are actually going through this.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it just feels wrong to be like, oh, well, since it doesn't match the written record,
right,
we'll say it's a lie. When who wrote down the written record?
Exactly.
The guys who are trying to make themselves look good.
Exactly.
So,
and the oral history like fills in a lot of holes at times too, and answers questions that the English version doesn't. So they're both you know, historically valuable takes.
Yeah.
Both worthy of a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
But both very necessary, I think, to tell this story properly.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, as we try to, we will make sure to tell you when the story is super divergent and,
right,
you know, express both sides of it and
yeah,
we can talk it out.
Yep.
It's kind of our favorite part.
Yeah, true.
So when last we left the colonists, George Percy's shit leadership had whittled them down from 500 settlers to only 60.
Unbelievable.
In less than a year or two.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy sucked.
Yeah.
And one day, a supply ship that had been stuck in Bermuda for 10 months finally arrived in Virginia. On board was a man named John Rolfe, who was determined to get into the tobacco industry.
What a dream.
I know, right? I guess back then.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It was? I don't know. It's so weird to read about tobacco back then because they were like, some people really thought it was a medicinal, mm-hmm, it had a lot of medicinal properties.
Yeah.
And this one guy who wrote a lot about how it like fixed every problem eventually died of nose cancer. So anyway, it's just really fascinating to see what people were kind of how people viewed tobacco at this time.
That sounds a lot like how we view marijuana now. I hope it doesn't meet the same fate.
It's almost like we should legalize it so they can be studied.
Oh, boy.
For real. But anyway.
If only.
John Rolfe had boarded the ship, the Sea Venture, in England, carrying precious tobacco seeds from Trinidad.
Oh.
And no one knows how he got his hands on them. Because at the time, Spain had a monopoly on the tobacco industry, and they had made it punishable by death to sell tobacco seeds to anyone but Spanish people.
Oh.
So speculation station, I'd love to see John Rolfe, like, walking up to someone in Trinidad being like, buenas tardes, mi amigos. I am definitely Spanish from Spain. Have you any tobacco seeds, por favor, y gracias? That'd be smashing if you had any lying about. I'll just take them off your hands.
The people in Trinidad, like, well, he said mi amigos. That sounds right.
In Trinidad, they're like, I don't know, he's white, they're white, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Just give him the damn seed.
Giving me money? Here.
Yeah, fine.
Have him.
Go.
But this ship, the Sea Venture, had been shipwrecked in Bermuda, and for 10 months, the settlers scraped by on the islands as they broke up their leaky-ass big ship to make two smaller ones to carry them the rest of the way to Virginia. Some of these settlers, however, had died, maybe from harsh tropical conditions or from low supplies or various other reasons, and two of the people who tragically died here were John Rolfe's wife, Sarah, and their infant daughter. So when Rolfe arrived in the New World, he was a widower. Mm-hmm. There's this guy on board who was named Lord de Loire. And he, by the way, is the guy they named Delaware after, Lord de Loire. That's true.
Yeah.
And he was there to be the new president of the colony of Virginia. As we mentioned in part one, when these ships arrived, there were 60 crazed, half-starved colonists running around in this rundown fort. And Lord de Loire was like, no, absolutely not. We're going back to England. Goodbye to this mess. I imagine he's like Donald Glover in that meme from Community where he walks in and everything's on fire and people are running around screaming.
He's got the pizzas like,
never mind. So they hop back on the ship, but all of a sudden, this new ship showed up with 150 extra settlers and a year's worth of provisions. So Delaware is like, never mind. All ashore who's going ashore. And by the way, everyone's going ashore. So let's get back to it. We're going to give this the old college try. And I think this is like round four of them trying to make this work.
Yeah. Many rounds have happened.
Those English are nothing if not persistent.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I mean, hearing their story in part one about how bad they were, especially had John Smith not shown up and saved their asses.
Seriously.
I can't believe the English did anything, let alone were the largest empire in the world around this time.
It's shocking. And they literally were like, persistence wins the prize. If you can throw enough bodies at any situation,
that's true. They had a lot of bodies.
And they have a lot of bodies.
Yeah. But I mean, God, it's like we can't handle intense sunlight.
Uh-huh.
And we took over like half the equator. We can't handle any diseases. And we were going to all new places, getting sick and dying left
mm-hmm.
and right.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to farm. We're bringing perfumers in to farm. It's incredible that they were able to do this. And horrible.
And horrible, yes. And Lord de Loire had brought a change of policy with him as well. Because we mentioned in part one that the Virginia Company had sent all these settlers with a pretty strong, like, don't offend the natives sort mm-hmm. of idea. Like,
yeah.
They were like, whatever you can do to avoid a skirmish with them, please do. But at this point, the Anglo-Powhatan War had broke out. Violence between the natives and the settlers was escalating, and the Virginia Company was sick of all this chaos.
Yeah.
It was really making them look bad around the drawing rooms of London. I mean, actually, the British did not like hearing about natives being badly treated by their... It made them look bad. It really did.
Yeah, they were like, we don't want to hear about that. Keep it quiet.
Keep it quiet. If I hear about our behavior, I want it to be all above board and honorable.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, they were in the New World to make money, damn it. Shouldn't we make some by now?
Right, right.
We've been spending and supplying and spending and supplying, and all we get are dead bodies. So they decided that now it was a-okay with them to let Lord de Loire ruthlessly suppress, by whatever means he saw necessary, any internal dissent or external threats. And that meant life got a lot more brutal for the colonists and the tribes.
So wait, so the Virginia Company was like, first we said, don't treat the native people badly. Mm-hmm. And you did, and that made us look bad. So what we're going to change mm-hmm. is we're not going to say don't treat them badly anymore.
That's right.
That way, that's unbelievable.
Because again, the decision making is a real question mark for me. I don't understand how any of these folks made their choices.
You're really fixing the wrong problem here.
And like life was already so brutal for the colonists, particularly already they were already infighting. They were already starving.
Yeah.
They were already diseased. I mean, they already had so many problems. Mm-hmm. And then they were just like creating more within themselves. So it's really weird. Within Jamestown, martial law was introduced. Delaware would whip colonists for any infraction, like missing church.
Heaven forbid. Oh, I guess literally.
Yeah, right. A second offense of blasphemy was punished by having a lancet thrust through the tongue.
Wow.
Good Lord.
You know, and these are the guys that are calling everyone else savages.
Right.
You know, just like, okay. Colonists who deserted or who robbed the storehouse were hanged, burned, broken upon wheels, and bound to trees until they starved.
Oh, my God.
Even stealing flowers from another colonist's garden became a capital offense. And again, I mean, like we're saying, it just seems so weird to be like, okay, you know what? Too many people are dying. Let's make everything an offense where you get executed.
Yeah.
Like everything you do, you could get killed for it. That'll fix it.
Oh, my God. And of course, they were even crueler to the native tribes. They had previously engaged in skirmishes with these tribes, of course, but usually on both sides, they had their rules. You know, they would leave the women and children alone, or they often took prisoners rather than brutalizing and killing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Prisoners were more valuable than corpses, after all, right?
I mean, yeah, you can trade them for things, their negotiation and, you know, negotiating tactics or whatever.
I mean, I remember in part one, we talked about the prisoners taught them how to farm.
Right.
So,
and they would negotiate, you know, they had some. So then Powhatan was like, here, I'll give you some shit if you give me the guys back, and vice versa. So they were really, it was more valuable to not kill someone than it was to kill them.
But now the English were done with all that. They attacked a neighboring tribe and they killed everyone there, and they burned down their houses and their crops. George Percy, who was in charge of this raid, tried to spare the queen and her children by taking them prisoner. But Lord Delaware was like, no, the only good native is a dead native.
Mm-hmm.
Percy wrote that they threw the children into the river and then blew their brains out. Just a charming way to put it. But when he was ordered to burn the queen alive, Percy stood his ground. He said, no, I will not do that. I have seen enough bloodshed for today. So instead, he had some of his men take her to the woods and kill her with swords.
Oh.
Yeah. He's like, I said, I've seen enough bloodshed for today, but someone else can see it. These chaps haven't seen enough. Let them see a little. George Percy, villain of the week.
I know,
except
right?
Delaware is worse.
Yeah,
so it's like,
yeah.
I guess England is the villain of the week in this story. You know, I gotta say, I don't know how it is over in the UK, and maybe some of y'all can enlighten me.
Yeah.
But we, of course, have a lot of, discussion and conversation and a certain degree of guilt about how American colonists treated the indigenous people when they came here. Do y'all talk about that in England? Because that was you.
That's true.
You know, I don't know if that's something. I mean, obviously, we are the descendants of those direct people, but England has the descendants of all the people who were ordering it mostly to happen.
Very true.
So are y'all talking about that?
And who profited off of all that land being seized
Maybe.
And everything.
I'll go ahead and start an international incident here.
Uh-oh.
Maybe England owes some reparations to the native tribes of America. Anybody ever suggest that? Because honestly, England owes some reparations all over the world.
I was about to say, I think, you know, you want to get on that list, you'll be in the bottom of a very long list.
Hey, maybe that's why England, like, backed off the empire thing. And they're like, oh, now we're a real small country.
No.
Sorry, we can't pay anybody back everything we took. But look at these beautiful jewels the queen is wearing. Oh, by the way, we still have all your stuff in our museums.
I know, right? We're not going to give it away.
Anyway, I'm just saying.
It's a very good point. I kind of thought that too, because, you know, you're studying colonial America and it's Native Americans and it's English. There's no Americans as we know them yet, as we are yet.
Yeah. Americans.
It happens pretty soon, but like.
Actual United States of America citizens treated a whole other class of people horribly, like monsters.
Well, and the natives.
Can't discount that.
Pretty much everyone.
We do continue to have our... Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, but I guess you could say that we started as we meant to go on, which was pretty horrible.
Yeah.
And then we went on with it. So, yay!
Hey, there's some great things.
There is, yeah.
We got...
This is a comedy show.
You're right, so moving on.
Think of something funny and we'll move on. So, yeah, okay, because Delaware had showed up with this clear change in how they were going to be behaving toward the natives, the tribes were all being way more cautious around the English, especially Pocahontas. Rumors persisted that the English were hoping to kidnap her and keep her hostage because they knew how much Powhatan cared about her.
Yeah.
So they were like, this might be our linchpin of our victory,
she was valuable,
basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She'd be a very valuable hostage. So when Pocahontas came of age in 1610, her ceremony was much quieter than it normally would have been if there had not been any English around.
Mm-hmm.
She would have had a bigger quinceañera, you fucks. This ceremony, called a huskana for boys and a huskana squaw for girls, happened once kids hit puberty, so anywhere from 12 to 14.
Okay.
And it was a signal that they were grown now and ready for courtship and marriage. And since Pocahontas' mother was dead, her older sister, Matachana, oversaw the ceremony. The boys' rituals seemed to be much more intense and elaborate than the women's. They had to, like, run a gauntlet. They had to lay like they were dead while everyone else feasted around them.
Oh, I would have failed right there.
I know, right?
Because
it's after they run the gauntlet, so they're already hungry.
Oh,
and then
my
they're,
God.
Like, probably smelling all this good food, and everybody's laughing and chilling, and they're, like, laying like corpses.
I mean, no wonder
trees.
These people were so badass and patient.
Okay.
You know?
They were used to it. And then also the boys would go live in the woods for 9 months with some elders. And so then when they came back, there was this big gap between the boy that left and the man who came home.
Okay, sure.
So now he's seen as a warrior. You know, he's a man now. And also their allegiance had changed from family to the whole tribe.
Hmm.
So it was a really non-symbolic way, I guess, of just showing, again, that gap of, like, a boy left, and here comes a man.
Yeah.
You know, and he had 9 months to prove that he could live in the woods and deal with some crazy shit, I imagine.
Yeah, oh, sure.
For women, I can find very little of the process. I'm assuming, you know, they mostly talked about, like, what Pocahontas wore and stuff like that. So I'm kind of assuming that it was mostly about looking cute, and then they would do some ritual dancing and feasting and praying, that kind of thing. Less of a gauntlet, less of running off for 9 months.
Right.
Not as much of that going on.
Yeah, their life was going to be a gauntlet. They're,
right.
they're curing the meat and weaving the
right.
rugs and building the fires mm-hmm. and building the houses.
They're like, your 9 months of childbirth comes later.
Yeah.
Their nine right. months comes first. But they did also have a ritual name change.
Okay.
So they had their childhood name and then they had their name as a woman. And they mm-hmm. got to choose that name. And this is when Pocahontas chose the name Pocahontas for herself after her mother.
Oh, nice. Which was what her father had already called her,
yeah,
you know,
she, yeah.
for because he loved her mother so much. So she already had some attachment to that name for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I'm
That's
sure they
great.
Were not surprised when she was like, let's
right.
just go ahead and make it official.
Yeah. Now, after this ceremony, the oral history, this book, states, quote, there was a big powwow held in celebration and thanksgiving.
Hey!
Oh, look at that.
Thanksgiving, everybody.
Uh-huh.
I knew there was a tie-in somewhere.
So one of the big moments of this powwow is the courtship dance that allowed single male warriors to search for a mate. And our girl Pocahontas was approached by a warrior named Kokoum. The other side of history says that, quote, the fact he was not a chief and thus not high in status suggests that Pocahontas may have married for love. But Powhatan, her dad, the head honcho here, mm-hmm. was also 100% into this pairing. He was
yeah.
like, yes, good choice. I like these. I'm standing. I'm shipping Pocahontas and Kokoum here. We stand. Because first of all, Kokoum was the brother of one of Powhatan's closest friends, Chief Japazaw. So you can imagine mm-hmm. Powhatan and Japazaw, like, trying to match make.
Yeah, right. I feel like they'd be like, oh my God, wouldn't it be so cute if my daughter and your brother, oh my God.
Oh my God, they're perfect.
I love
yes,
it.
Please.
Okay, listen. Somebody go tell someone to make sure they sit together during dinner, okay?
Try it. Make sure they get the same spaghetti noodle.
And then when they do, they're both like sitting in the corner together, like watching, like, oh, it happened. Oh, he's looking at her. She's looking at him.
Adorable.
I love it.
But even better than this fact that he was, you know, related to this friend of his is that it's possible Kokoum was one of Powhatan's bodyguard, which consisted of 50 of the best warriors that all the tribes had to offer. And remember, they're getting increasingly worried that the colonials would try to take Pocahontas hostage. So Powhatan was certainly glad that she was going to marry someone who could protect her, one of the yeah. best warriors there is.
Right. He was like, was if you hadn't picked him, I probably would have picked
right,
from
yeah.
this selection of warriors for you. But they also took the precaution of sending the newlyweds to live with Kokoum's family in the Potawomac tribe village, Passipatanzi, which is also where Chief Japazaw lived. Mm. And it was in a remote area, it's kind of like northern Virginia. There was no English hanging around there yet. And Powhatan figured that with both Kokoum and Japazaw looking out for her, Pocahontas would be safe. And then he could get on with the Powhatan part of the Anglo-Powhatan War.
Right, right.
And for a while, it seems everything was, you know, turning out fine.
Okay, while... cool. Well, let's just stop there.
Yeah, right?
And sound happy ending. They lived happily ever after. The end. Can we just cut it off there? No.
I guess, but no. It would be a pretty shitty episode. Yeah, while she was living with the Potawomac, the other side of history says she gave birth to a son. Other places say they had a daughter. So not exactly sure. But anyway, they had a kid and they were really happy about it.
Okay.
All right. And that's what matters.
You're right. Let's include that. And then let's cut it off. End of the story. Happily ever after with either a son or a daughter. Who knows? The end. Right. Well, we're going to take a commercial break and then I guess we'll have to come back with the rest of the story.
Yeah, we should break.
So, stay tuned because it's thrilling.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show.
So, when we left off, of course, Pocahontas had married Kokoum and went to go live in his village where Chief Chapazaw was going to look out for them, and everything's good. Meanwhile, the war is going strong. The land along the rivers is extremely fertile, having been well cared for by the Powhatan Nation. Take a lesson, English. And the English were doing everything they could to steal that good agricultural land away. They'd already taken control of the entire James River, and they were always looking for a way to snatch up Pocahontas, because they figured holding her hostage would be a great way to end the hostilities, but still get whatever they wanted. It was a valuable bargaining chip.
Yeah.
They knew how much Powhatan cared for his daughter. So one day, in 1613, Captain Samuel Argall learned where Pocahontas and her family were hiding out, and he decided to, quote, possess myself of her by any stratagem.
Stratagem.
According to this book, The Other Side of History, he went to Chief Chapazaw and threatened to attack the entire village if he didn't hand over his sister-in-law Pocahontas. Chapazaw knew that they couldn't hold off an English attack all by themselves, and they wouldn't have time for backup to arrive from Powhatan. So he made Argall promise not to harm Pocahontas, and then, reluctantly, made his wife go get her and bring her aboard Argall's ship. As soon as she was aboard, Argall handed them a copper kettle, implicating them in the betrayal, basically saying, look, we gave you something for it, so now you've officially traded her for this kettle.
And she saw it, more importantly.
She saw it, right.
So that she could tell Powhatan, oh, they must have traded me for a copper kettle.
And before sailing away, he had Kokoum killed. Fortunately, their son was with a relative and was spared, but pretty dark.
Right.
And that is the oral history from Pocahontas' people passed down. That's the way the story goes.
Yeah. But the English story is different. They say the Potawomac tribe was not always loyal to Powhatan. For example, they were still trading with the English, even though it was technically forbidden during this war. And that's how Captain Argall had a contact among their Potawomack tribe to know that Pocahontas was there.
Right.
So Captain Argall actually went to Japazaw and offered to ally with the Potawomack against Powhatan if they would hand over Pocahontas.
Wow.
So the English are like, they were ready to turn against their own. Uh-huh. And that's how come it worked out.
Yeah.
Okay,
Right.
And then Japazaw tricked Pocahontas aboard. Together they held her for ransom and demanded the release of English prisoners and the return of weapons from Powhatan.
Wow.
And according to the Mataponi, he immediately paid the ransom, but then the English demanded a second payment. According to the English, Powhatan only paid part of the ransom and they had to hold out for the full amount. So there's a breakdown here.
Yeah. So the Mataponi say, we gave you the $1,000 you asked for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the English said, oh, yes, but you forgot about the second payment,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
But the English say, we asked you for $2,000 in the first place and you only gave us half.
Right.
So again, it's...
And this is a hard one because there's you would have to be there to know.
Right. I'm inclined to side with who I sympathize with, right?
Right.
I'm inclined to be like, well, the oral history of the Mataponi, I want to take their side because they were the ones being subjected here. But I don't know. I cannot say that. Neither of us can. And again, you're looking at what was written down by people who very much wanted to make themselves look good.
Right.
And what was kind of a game of telephone for a few generations.
Yeah.
Before it was written down. So neither is necessarily a hugely reliable account or the whole story.
Yeah.
But at which point in history, usually we just kind of have to decide for ourselves what we believe or that we don't really believe anything, I think is where I land with it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I know that I'm not getting the full story and I know the story doesn't exist.
Yeah.
There's some things we cannot know, and that's kind of hard to reconcile with sometimes, too.
It's true. And then other times you just have the cultural differences that just misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Where, like, Powhatan was like, well, if I make a deal with John Smith, then I've made a deal with all of y'all.
Right.
Because that's how it would work for us. If you made a deal with one of my werowances, he wouldn't be able to make it without my permission. And then, therefore, if I got somebody took over for me, they would probably honor that agreement.
Yeah.
Whereas the English didn't see it that way at all. They were like, that's just some guy.
Yeah.
You know, he don't represent all of us.
Right.
Or the gift giving or any of that stuff.
Right.
It was might have just been enough that the cultural difference was not respected by enough by either side maybe to fully know what conversation they were actually having. Does that make sense?
Right, right. And in either case, what we do know is true in between these two stories is there was a woman being traded around who didn't really fully understand what was going on. And she was being used by many people in this as a token in this war that was going on.
And then also just to talk about Kokoam.
Yeah.
The English accounts don't really have much written about him. And they say no one knows what happened to him. And that he just wasn't, he's just not part of their story at all.
Interesting.
So there's no record of him being killed on purpose by Samuel Argall.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have to wonder if Samuel Argall would have known Kokoam, would have just been like, there's some warriors and we killed him. I don't know who he's married to. I don't care.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, so he might have been killed or not. We don't know what happened to Kokoam for real.
Man, history. It's not. It's a grab bag of truths.
Well,
and a whole lot of lies.
And it's good to remember as contemporary things are happening around us.
Yes.
How much things are being framed and sold in a package.
Right, right.
And it might look like, well, I'm here now, so I clearly know the whole story. And you don't. You never know it.
No.
Not really.
No,
so
absolutely.
Anyway.
Now, of course, whatever the truth here is, this back and forth issue, this issue of them taking Pocahontas, whoever's idea it was, whoever was okay with it, this created a tense standoff that lasted for a whole year.
Mm-hmm.
Pocahontas was held in Jamestown for a few months and then taken to a Virginian city called Henricus, which had been established in 1611, away from the swampy Jamestown Peninsula. This is also where John Rolfe, remember him? he had established the Verena Farms plantation and was experimenting with his tobacco strain, which was called Orinoco.
Hey, Orinoco, let me see, let me see.
Thank you, Enya, for stopping
in. I'm here to help. I'm here to help.
I don't know how many of our listeners are Enya fans.
I've come from my castle in Ireland.
But Orinoco Flow is a very important song in the
90s. That's right.
So John Rolfe's experiments in tobacco farming and mixing these strains and everything, they had turned Virginia into a profitable colony, finally, in 1612. He wanted to let the Orinoco flow all through Virginia. But, of course, there were some obstacles. King James hated tobacco, so he discouraged it. He was...
I won't catch you smoking in my colonies. Young man, as long as you're living under my rule, no tobacco.
He called it a vile weed, too, so it is kind of weed. It's like marijuana in its own time.
Also, the Virginia Company thought colonists would plant tobacco instead of corn, which they desperately needed to become a self-sufficient colony. So they discouraged tobacco planting, too. And then finally, there just wasn't enough labor to handle cultivating a cash crop like tobacco, as well as cultivating food to feed the colony. So you might be thinking around this point, as I was when I was reading this, boy... How did the Americans deal with the fact that they didn't have enough labor to farm tobacco and food at the same time? Well, the Library of Congress website writes, quote, "The ultimate answer to the labor problem was ominously foreshadowed in a little noticed event that Rolfe describes in 1619, the arrival of a Dutch man of war carrying a group of captive Africans. For by the end of the century, African slave labor would become the colony's economic and social foundation." So really wild to see these early steps.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, in a large part, John Rolfe himself deciding, no, I'm going to make tobacco work.
Mm-hmm.
And that being just, you know, an early domino in what eventually led to, you know, the enslavement of an entire race of people in this country.
For generations.
Yeah, that we're still dealing with the repercussions of today.
Yep.
Wow. John Rolfe, not to put all that on your shoulders, but...
not all of it, but certainly
I know.
A little
I mean, he's just
it.
Trying to make some money. He's just like, nobody else is doing tobacco. I think it's a great idea, guys.
I know, right? Turns out it's addictive. Anyone knew that? But yeah, but at this point in our story, it's 1613, so this has not happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is pure and great.
Yeah.
Pocahontas is around 15 or 16 at this point, and she's taken to Henricus for safekeeping and put in the care of Reverend Alexander Whitaker to learn more of the English language, to learn their religion and their way of life. Because the Virginia Company also had a goal to convert Native Americans to Christianity. It was like a big, major colonization goal of theirs. So they probably figured Pocahontas was a great place to start with all that. And according to the colonist Ralph Hamer, Pocahontas received, quote, extraordinary courteous usage among her captors. But according to the other side of history, Pocahontas fell into a deep depression while she was being held hostage. The English constantly told her that because her father wouldn't pay the ransom, he must not love her enough must not love her anymore. And if he did, he would pay it and she could leave. She could leave right now if he would just pay it. But I guess he just doesn't love you. Like they were just every day like drilling her with
just
this add horrible
gaslighting to the list of transgressions. Yeah.
So she had a nervous breakdown, unsurprising. And the English asked if her sister would be allowed to visit. So they made an arrangement, and when Matachana showed up with her husband, Pocahontas told her that she had been raped and thought that she was pregnant. And the Mattaponi oral history says the reason they moved her to Henricus in the first place from Jamestown was to hide this pregnancy.
Oh, interesting.
And it also says that she gave birth to a son called Thomas before she converted to Christianity, before she ever married John Rolfe or any of that.
But it's sticky, because as we mentioned in the first episode, this history is disputed somewhat. Some historians, like Helen Rowntree, who writes for the Encyclopedia of Virginia, believe that no oral history exists at all, but also that treating Pocahontas badly would have gone against English interests. They had a truce going during negotiations, and they were still outnumbered by the native people, and they feared retaliation. So this is really the biggest divergence in the two stories so far, and it definitely deserves, you know, some conversation.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, you know, it's not like this is an unusual scenario for a girl from one of the native tribes.
Yeah, so, to be raped and, yeah, and stuff. Yeah.
It's not hard to believe that they would have treated a girl like this because they did that.
In fact, I just saw yesterday that Deb Haaland, the Interior Secretary, uh-huh. has added squaw to the list of slurs.
Really?
Because that is a word that the English used specifically to describe young native children that they wanted to have sex with.
Wow.
Like, I don't know if that meant young, like, prepubescent, or if it meant young, like, they're 12 to 14 and have undergone their puberty dance.
Well, yeah, but...
Or not.
Either way,
it's really gross.
Yeah.
I just want to throw that in there, because youth is just such a different word to us today than it was to the colonists.
Yeah, sure,
I just like to really point that out.
No, that's interesting.
But it's very interesting, so yeah, don't say that.
But then, again, like, as we said in part one, it kind of doesn't feel fair to reject the tribal oral history out of hand just because it doesn't align with the written records of the time. I mean, this is what we've been saying.
Right.
Because, of course, the written records of the time were written by the English, who were not trying to write down, like, yeah, and then I raped a prisoner. obviously, yeah. They're going to make it as clean and positive to themselves mm-hmm. as they can.
I mean, plus they're out here being like, we're Christian. We're these men of God trying right. to spread this wonderful word of God. And why would they write down, and we did that by raping this young girl.
Right.
Doing all this crazy shit.
Yeah.
But I do want to point out that this story could also sort of be propaganda by the tribe itself in a way. The way the English account is somewhat propaganda for them.
Yeah, in terms of just like trying to earn sympathies.
Yeah. I don't mean it in a bad way. Like,
right.
But it's kind of like, listen, you know, this is something that happened to a lot of Native women. They were raped and impregnated and killed by Englishmen.
Right.
But it seems like white people don't really care about any Native besides Pocahontas. So,
yeah.
Okay, why don't we put that experience on that character that you care about, and it'll make you care about the actual Native people that it happened to.
Interesting.
She's like your avatar for Native
yeah.
people you give a fuck about.
Right.
And so if that's what it takes, then here. Now do you care? Are you pissed? What are you going to do? Like, you know, I mean, that could be true, too. So
Avatar, a challenging choice of words, because, of course, the movie Avatar was
Very
such
true.
A poor representation of Western colonization of
right.
Native peoples.
Right.
It's interesting to kind of pick it apart like that. Again, just going back to the idea that you've got an oral history that's been told over and over again down mm-hmm. through generations that will inevitably have changed.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens with, that's been happening in all storytelling throughout history.
Right.
Written or not.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got the written history as some people who are trying to make themselves look good. So where's the truth? I can't even say it's somewhere in between because it might be on either end.
Yeah.
All we know is the situation as it stands today and the documented history that we do have.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for most sane, conscientious people
right.
can go ahead and align your sympathies where they ought to be.
Yeah. But I mean, that might be what I was saying might be kind of why some historians don't want to comment.
Yeah.
Because they're like, first of all, it's an oral tradition. So how am I supposed to come in and tell you haven't been telling this story for generations?
Yeah.
Like, that's not for me to
exactly.
do. But also, like, again, it's... The facts as they occurred to Pocahontas might not be true, but they certainly are true facts.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
totally.
It's sort of like, I don't want to be like, that's a whole bunch of hogwash because it has a lot of truth in it.
Right.
Even if it didn't happen to that character.
She's the representative character of the experience.
Right.
As a whole.
So it might be like, yeah, okay. I mean, I wouldn't say Pocahontas. I'd say somebody else, but nobody cares about anybody else.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if that's my own speculation stage.
Yeah. I mean, we do that today in stories. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. we'll do a movie about somebody riding the Oregon Trail and like mm-hmm. that character becomes iconic and everything that happened to them is what happened to people on the Oregon Trail. But
right.
we're centralizing it on one character. That's very common in storytelling, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Totally.
Yeah. So Pocahontas did live among the English for about a year while she was waiting to be released. In March of 1614, the standoff culminated in this violent clash along the Pamunkey River, and Pocahontas was allowed to go ashore to speak with some of her relatives, and she told them, according to the English record, that, quote, if her father had loved her, he would not value her less than old swords, guns, or axes. Wherefore, she would still dwell with the English men who loved her.
I believe the Mattapony history has a similar quote from her. But of course, in their history, she's been told that he don't love her. Whereas in the English history, he, you know, they feel like he doesn't. He really doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, they're framing it as if he really doesn't.
And that she came to that conclusion herself.
Right. Mm-hmm. And as Tony Horowitz relates in A Voyage Long and Strange, one Englishman certainly did love her. Enya enthusiast John Rolfe, who wrote to the colony's governor asking for permission to marry her. He wrote that his feelings for her, quote, have a long time been so entangled and enthralled in so intricate a labyrinth that I was even awearied to unwind myself thereout. Apparently, this confession was a little risky because the English didn't look kindly on marriage with heathens.
Well, yeah.
And Rolfe wrote that he knew, quote, the heavy displeasure which Almighty God conceived against the sons of Levi and Israel for marrying strange wives.
Oh, God.
Strange wives. Like, okay. And he knew the other settlers might, quote, tax or taunt me. But even so, Rolfe was too in love to care. He could barely endure the many passions and sufferings which I have daily, hourly, yea, and in my sleep endured.
Wow.
But it wasn't about sex. It's not about sex. It's not, definitely not, I don't want to just have sex with her. He was very quick to assure the governor it was not just about carnal, you know, pleasures or whatever. Uh-huh. It was definitely because he could save her soul and his own through their union.
Oh.
She wanted to become Christian, he told the governor, and, quote, gave a great appearance of love to me. And Tony concludes this by saying, we have only Rolfe's words as evidence of her affection.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important to keep in mind. Pocahontas never wrote down, like, Mrs. John Rolfe or anything in her diary. Like, right. She, we don't know how she felt about him.
Pocahontas Rolfe. Like, his little hearts.
Mrs. Pocahontas Rolfe.
Wow.
The other side of history says that likely she just wanted to do the best she could for her people. She thought this would be a great way to handle it. She had a half-white child, so she was probably like, fine, whatever.
Mm.
They also think that Rolfe wanted to marry her, not necessarily because he was in love with her, but he wanted Powhatan's tobacco guys to, like, give him some guidance on his crops or whatever.
Okay.
So kind of a cold way of looking at their union.
Yeah.
I guess I prefer to believe his letter to the governor that he was burning with passion
right,
for her.
And
hopefully
she
felt the same.
Yeah.
That would be a nicer story, certainly.
It's given me just tiny little flashes of Carl Tanzler, who wrote in his book about, you know, the love he shared with Elena de Hoyos. And, you know, we look back on an hour and like, she had no interest in him at all. But he was the only one writing it down. So, again, don't know if that's true for these two or not.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just have to kind of choose how you want to look at it, I guess.
In a way, kind of, because nobody can tell you what's true.
Yeah. Not uncommon, though, even if we're going with the oral history tradition, for women, even in the tribes, to marry for sensible reasons.
Sure.
For unification reasons.
Yeah.
So that entirely possible.
Right. And they pointed out, too, of course, that being taken hostage was also very normal amongst the tribes. It was very normal to, like, okay, I got a hostage. You're going to be treated well for as long as I need to keep you.
Right.
So it wasn't anything like her being held hostage by the English would have been fine, except that she fell into this depression. And that's why they think she was mistreated.
Mm-hmm. But look, everyone gave permission for this wedding, including Powhatan. So maybe this was the answer, right? Maybe this all worked out. Marriages, like we said, they bring together warring nations all the time. Both the Powhatan nation and the English settlers were trying to find a way to end these hostilities without feeling like they lost.
Mm-hmm.
So in April of 1614, Pocahontas was baptized and she took the name Rebecca.
Oh my God, Becky. I love your hair.
Tony Horowitz writes that she was named Rebecca, quote, after Isaac's biblical bride, whom God told, two nations are in thy womb, one mightier than the other. So a bit of a loaded name.
All right. I'm like, did she pick it or did they pick it? Because if they picked it, that's a real message.
We don't have any evidence to suggest that she knows the name Rebecca. I mean, I guess she's learned the Bible some.
They would have been probably teaching her English by reading her the Bible, I imagine.
Yeah.
And I mean, they wanted to convert her, so
she didn't.
The best
she wasn't like scrolling through Instagram like Rebecca, Jessica, no, Mackenzie, maybe.
Yeah, she had that chalkboard that's like Kaylin, McCarty, Jashlyn. They were all crossed out. She's like Rebecca.
Rebecca married John Rolfe with her uncle and two brothers in attendance. Her father couldn't come, obviously, because it was Powhatan. He would have been killed or captured, likely. But he did send a necklace of huge pearls as a gift. And he also gifted them hundreds of acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very supportive of this union. Yeah. And this was the beginning of what became known as the Peace of Pocahontas. Ralph Hamer wrote, quote, "Ever since, we have had friendly commerce and trade not only with Powhatan himself, but also with his subjects round about us, so as now I see no reason why the colony should not thrive apace." And it did. Partly because of Ralph's Orinoco flow. Tony Horwitz writes, quote, "Within a few years, settlers were growing tobacco to the exclusion of other crops and exporting it by the ton at tremendous profit. Tobacco was the gold that Europeans had so long sought in North America and never found." Well, that sounds once again like everything's going great for everyone. And I feel like we should just stop the story right there and not hear anymore, right? We got everybody's married and happy. It's like the end of a Shakespeare play.
Mm-hmm.
And now all these settlers, they're finally making all this cash, just profit, 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 right?
Yeah. They made a lot of profit, probably because they didn't have to pay the people who were harvesting the tobacco.
Oops.
I think that really helps your profit margin. Just something I learned for the history. But anyway, speaking of profit, let's go to a commercial break.
Oh.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in
exactly.
to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to part three of part two of the Pocahontas story.
Yeah, I like, kind of got lost in the middle of that.
I was like, wait a second. Does that make it part six?
Oh.
Divide it by two. Anyway, welcome back to the show.
Let's not get into that. So yeah, so things are going well in Henricus and Jamestown and other settlements. And it's generally agreed that in 1615, Pocahontas, now known as Rebecca Rolfe, gave birth to Thomas Rolfe. Like we said, the oral history is pretty firm that she gave birth to Thomas before she married John. But I don't know, it seems a little weird to hide a baby for a year and then jump out being like, here's my newborn, one-year-old.
Right,
I mean,
right.
This isn't a sitcom.
They'll come out
the baby
with like a toddler and be like, oh, you know, fresh out of the delivery room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, she's still recovering and here the kids are walking. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like to cast doubt on the oral history or
right,
anything like
right.
that. That one just doesn't quite play for me. I'm not really seeing them being able to hide a baby for a year and then popping out like, this is a new baby.
Yeah.
I was like, I guess it's possible that she maybe had another baby that they named Thomas and they put the first Thomas somewhere else. And then they were like, here's this Thomas. But that seems weird, too. Like, I don't know. I that one just doesn't play out for me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Quite right.
I don't know.
It feels discordant. But again, we don't know. So
we do not.
But according to the English history, she had a newborn child in 1615. And then the Virginia Company decided they wanted John and Rebecca to come to England and show off how great the Virginia Company was doing at establishing settlements and converting natives to Christianity. So they kind of wanted like a walking billboard their efforts in the New World. So she and Rolfe went to England in 1616.
And they weren't alone in this voyage. They were accompanied by their son Thomas and 11 Powhatans, including Pocahontas' older sister, Matachana. And her husband came along as well as a priest called Tomocomo. Tomocomo was going to be Powhatan's eyes and ears in England. It was finally his chance to get a look at this famed country that all the white people were showing up from, talking such a big deal. Oh, we have all these, you know, horrible smelling streets and rickety carriages. And
at home, I can draw a bath.
Yeah, and apparently you've got like a bunch of people starving all the time, too.
Yeah.
An earlier native visitor to England had only seen London and the Thames and reported that there were no trees in England, which explained what brought the colonists to Senecomico. But Powhatan asked Tomocomo to go find out about the English God and the English King, and also to find out what really happened to John Smith.
That's right.
Because remember, he hadn't believed the story they told him back in 1609 that Smith had died on his way back to England. Tomocomo was also supposed to count as many Englishmen as he could by cutting notches into his stick. But as Tony writes, he, quote, had to quickly abandon this census and was likewise stunned by England's abundant crops and trees. So he must have seen more than just the city of London, because he's like, there's actually a butt ton of people here.
Yeah.
And there's a whole, there's so much land.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing over here?
What do they need us for?
They got all kinds of trees and rivers and shit.
Yeah. No, they went to Norfolk and they went to like a couple different, so he got to see the countryside.
Right, right.
And I was stunned because he was just like, well, we thought that's what you were over at our spot for.
Right.
And you got plenty of it.
You got plenty. And Helen Rountree, writing for Encyclopedia of Virginia, says, quote, his encounters with evangelistic clergymen would turn his sympathies forever against the English.
Whew.
I mean,
that wouldn't be hard, honestly.
Imagine the first guy to come up to him and be like, please come give confession for your sins, my son. He's like, what?
Like,
excuse me?
I bet they were like, because he's also a priest, right? So they were like, let's have a little priestly meeting and, and talk about priestly things. And the, you know, Tomocomo was like, well, we, you know, we smoke this pipe and we have these visions and we talk and we know we're part of the council with the whatever. And the clergymen were like, yes, well, we tell women they're going to hell. If they don't have sons, that's what we do.
So when Tomocomo got back to Virginia, he started advising Opechancanough, Powhatan's brother, who would eventually plan the attack that started the Second Anglo-Powhatan War.
So interesting that Tomocomo got back and he's like, listen, Opechancanough, like, you don't know about these guys over here. And Opechancanough's like, you know what? I never liked these fuckers. When it's my turn, let's get some action going.
For real.
And Pocahontas was presented as a princess while she was in England. This is sort of like one of the, you know, the first time we're starting to hear this royalty kind of moniker, I guess, being bestowed on her. But she actually was not one, according to Powhatan tradition. Their lineage is matrilineal. So Powhatan's brothers or his sister's eldest sons were the ones in line. It's all about who the mom was. But it was just kind of a way to, like, let everyone know what kind of treatment Pocahontas should get while she's in town. You know, they were like, she's not just a brown woman whom you treat badly. She is a royal brown woman, so treat her nice.
Right, because again, I think they were really trying to show a good time in England to all of the native tribes that they would then say, oh, well, then yes, we'll take your way of life. That's what we would prefer.
That's true.
They were really trying to sell the tribes on England via Pocahontas.
Yeah. John Smith even wrote in a letter to Queen Anne that they should treat her like a royal guest because it would help maintain their goodwill with the Powhatans.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like she was pretty well received. She and John Rolfe went to plays and parties. They were seated with lords and ladies. And once Pocahontas and Tomocomo were seated with King James, and apparently he was just so unprepossessing that they didn't know it was him until someone told him later, which I think must have been an interesting cultural, just weird moment for them because, like we said when in part one, when John Smith met Powhatan, they had really rolled it out. Like, he was, like, seated on this dais as he was dressed up for it. Like, they wanted to show off.
Right.
And then she's meeting their king, and he's, like, I guess wearing a beige suit or something. I don't know. He's just chilling in the corner.
Yeah.
And they were just like, that didn't look like a king to me, you know?
I'm so that's picturing also, like, how I imagine they probably dressed her over there in English clothes,
British.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm just juxtaposing in my mind this 12-year-old girl back in tribal America doing cartwheels in the village, you know, now like getting her corset tied up, you know, being put into this British bondage.
Right.
And told like, see, isn't this life better?
Right. You know? With like a ruff and like her hair all piled up and all this weird stuff. Yeah. I feel like if it were me, I'd be like, not really.
No? Can I go back to like having a good time?
I know, right? And we were doing fine. It does seem that they were pretty interested in some of it. Like, there was at one point, John Smith, like, sent some builders to Powhatan to build him an English-style house.
Yeah.
So there was, like, You know, there were some things that they were like, I'm interested in that. I'd like to know. Look. But it's almost more of an indictment to me of the English, because the natives were like, there's things about your culture that I like.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested in. Whereas the English were like, and your culture is nonsense and savage.
Right.
And you're all going to hell and I have to save you.
Right. Right.
Such
exactly.
Such a totally weird, completely different way of looking at the world around you.
Yeah. Because of course, like, you know, we don't want to say that the tribes weren't happy to receive guns for hunting,
sure,
or comforts, you know, that the English were so obsessed with,
mm-hmm,
you know, that I'm sure you show up and you're like, hey, try this comforter I made. You're like,
right,
whoa, damn, this is a lot better,
mm-hmm,
than what I've been making here. But then you get into like, well, how'd you make it? Well,
mm-hmm, yeah,
that takes a lot of, you know.
Right.
Have you ever heard of capitalism? Because it's kind of
no,
like that.
Actually, no.
It's great. You're going to love it.
But yeah, their homes were also really mobile, because they were tents,
right,
you
sure
know, with mats on the floor that they wove.
Yeah.
So they could pick up and go wherever they needed to go.
I remember Powhatan moved the whole capital city away from Jamestown.
Yeah,
right,
no big deal. And so maybe the English-style house, I mean, that could have been even him trying to be like, I'm also permanent, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it might have been just like, if I build a house like you build a house, maybe you'll see this as my property.
Yeah, sure, sure.
I mean, who knows? But yeah, Pocahontas, while she was in England, also spent some time with Rolf's family. So she got to meet her in-laws. That's nice, I guess, depending on how they were. She was introduced to society under their sponsorship. So she probably went to lots of parties and events. And she also sat for an English portrait, as
oh,
you
sure
say, fully dressed in very, very English garb.
Uh-huh.
She's looks like Queen Elizabeth in this photo,
wow,
except that she's not, obviously.
Now, it wasn't long after they arrived that Pocahontas learned that John Smith was still alive. She's like, that old man when I was a kid.
That old so-and-so.
Used to teach me English.
Yeah.
But it would be months before he called to see her. In his account, he said he was just busy. But it seems like everyone thinks that this was hella rude of him not to come see her, right? Historians and contemporaries alike believe that, like, this was a dick move.
Right. I mean, they're like, if you have a friend in town, you go call on him.
Yeah.
Like, what, you wait too long and it's incredibly impolite.
Right.
It's like you don't want to talk to him for some reason.
I mean, according...
What could that be?
according to you, this girl saved your life, you know?
A couple times. Wouldn't you want to go say hi to
You'd
her?
I think so. Or, yeah, is he like, oh, shit, she's going to call me out. See,
yeah,
that's never happened. And eventually they did meet, and it was an awkward meeting.
Mm-hmm.
John Smith wrote that when she saw him, Pocahontas, quote, without any word, turned about, obscured her face as not seeming well contented. Then she reminded him of all the promises he had made to Powhatan. What was yours should be his, she said. You called him father, being in his land a stranger. But instead, Smith had dipped out, and his English friends told Powhatan that he was dead. And none of them ever believed that. And in fact, Pocahontas told John Smith that the Powhatans that came to England with her had made sure to ask about him when they got to England. Quote, because your countrymen will lie much. So she's like, we're used to you guys lying. You know, the idea that John Smith was dead, of course we didn't believe that. So go check in on that guy.
Yeah. She's like, not only that, but we were like, it's the first thing we're going to do.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out, oh, you lied.
Surprise.
First thing we do is going to find out that you lied.
Right. Because again, Powhatan, like, would rather have been dealing with John Smith this whole time.
Yeah.
Than those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't so much, I think, that they were mad that John Smith was there. They were mad that the English had told him that John Smith was dead. When in fact, I speculation station wonder if Powhatan might not have told the English if he knew John Smith was alive. Well, then you get him back here. I want to talk to John Smith.
Maybe.
If we're gonna go through this, I liked talking to him, and I don't like you.
That might have been why they told him. Like,
yeah,
they
were, I would think
like
so.
He might have been like, "I'm sorry, but I made a deal with your werowance, John Smith," and they were like, "Well, John Smith ain't our chief, first of all, and secondly, he's dead.
Yep.
So now you're dealing with me, George Percy, who sucks."
Yep.
And like. And then Lord Delaware, who sucks even more, apparently.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's probably true. And I think they were still pretty pissed at John Smith, though, because, you know, I guess he hadn't really made it very clear how it worked or had promised them shit that he never could deliver.
Oh, yeah,
it's
sure.
It's very possible, too,
because
sure. He was, you know, kind of a brag, got
yeah.
braggart. So he might have been like, oh, yeah, no problem. Like, this is going to be great forever now and whatever. And then didn't even try to keep the peace after he left.
Right.
Maybe or something.
Right.
So anyway, I don't think she was happy with him. Is sure. Long and short of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
In March 1617, they all boarded a ship to go back to Virginia. They had done their propaganda tour for the Virginia Company, and it was time to go home. But suddenly, Pocahontas got really sick. And after only a few miles downriver, they stopped to take her ashore. That's where she passed away, telling her husband, "All must die." She was interred on March 21st, 1617. John Rolfe wrote that she was, quote, "much lamented," and she was only 21 years old. Much like a lot of this story, there are several theories about how Pocahontas died.
Mm.
In the other side of history, they say that Powhatan was told Pocahontas was poisoned. They say that she was in perfect health before they got on the boat back to Virginia. And then she suddenly got sick after a meal, and that's when she died. So the
Damn.
Timing's real awkward, and she probably got poisoned.
Huh.
In Voyage Long and Strange, Tony Horwitz says some of her contemporaries wrote that she was bothered by the smoky environments of the, you know, area of London that they were living in.
Oh, okay.
So maybe she had like tuberculosis or some kind of respiratory complaint.
Mm-hmm.
But Helen Rountree in the Encyclopedia Virginia says that's not very likely because Pocahontas would be very used to smoky native homes. They had like a fire in the middle of their tent. So it would have been very common to have a smoky house and that wouldn't have bothered her at all. She also said that John Rolfe had been given a huge grant to start a mission church in Virginia. And she writes that, quote, "Pocahontas would have been expected to serve the dual roles of interpreter and house mother, which would have been a strenuous assignment for someone who is ill or dying." So she doesn't see the tuberculosis argument because that, you know, you kind of have that for a minute before you get killed by it.
Right.
However, she says that the ships that brought John Rolfe, Tomocomo, and the other colonists back to Virginia after Pocahontas died also brought an epidemic of hemorrhagic dysentery that they called bloody flux with them. So maybe Pocahontas just got the bloody flux while she was on board and that's what killed her.
That sounds like a bloody fluxing bad time.
Ooh, for real. Ooh. Horrible. And honestly, that explanation makes the most sense to me personally, simply because her son Thomas, who is, you know, a toddler at this point, was also very sick at the same time that Pocahontas was. And when she was dying, she like told John Rolfe that she was happy to die if it meant that her son could live. And he was like telling her that it looks like Thomas is going to recover. And so she was able to die at peace.
Wow.
With that. So that lends a lot to me to say there's something going on in this ship. Why would they poison a toddler?
Well, and it's unlikely he would have survived and she wouldn't, you know.
And why poison her at all?
I don't really understand.
Why?
I mean, you know. There's assholes everywhere.
It's true.
But it could have just been some rando.
It's just odd to be like, okay, we got everything we wanted out of this native woman. She's converted. She's out here making us look good. Now she's going to go back to Virginia and make us look good even more with her people.
Right.
Let's kill her on the way?
In terms of a government conspiracy, I don't believe it. But some random pure blood asshole, you know, who's just like, I don't like that John Rolfe married one of these tribal women. Like, you know, you're posing as an English person, but you're not. Like, yeah, I could see some racist dick bag. You know, the poison story doesn't necessarily flesh out, but, you know, not to say that someone wouldn't do it just out of malice.
That's true.
It's always out of malice when you poison someone, but, but you know what I mean.
That's true. That's a good point. I do have a tendency to be like, there's no logic in that, forgetting that humans don't always act from logic.
Well, that's true, too.
Anyway, because Thomas the toddler was really sick and John Rolfe had to get back to the New World and open his church and everything, he ended up reluctantly having to leave Thomas in England to be cared for by his brother.
Mm.
Expecting, I think, to see him, you know, have him be sent to Virginia at some point, but he actually would never see him again. Thomas would not sail to Virginia until 1635, which is 13 years after John Rolfe died.
Oh, wow.
So he kind of lost both his parents that day.
I guess so, yeah. And Powhatan fell into a deep depression when he found out about Pocahontas' death. I mean, this had been his favorite daughter, you know, for her whole life. She'd been such an important part
right.
of this story.
And Pau Hutton's like, what, in his 70s at this point? She's only 21.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably expected her to live a lot longer.
Absolutely. The English got word of his death in April of 1618, and he was succeeded first by a brother who proved ineffectual, and then by his brother, Opechancanough, the last great Powhatan leader. And remember, Opechancanough had gotten all that shitty feedback about England from Tomocomo, being like, these guys aren't cool. And Helen Rountree writes in a stunning throwback to our Carl Tanzler episode, second reference to that, that, quote, if his funeral followed custom, then Powhatan's body was flayed, his flesh removed from the bones and dried, his skeleton rearticulated, and his abdomen filled with valuables, and the whole covered with the preserved skin to achieve a semblance of the living form. That's a cultural tradition, and in its own way, it's beautiful.
Right.
In my way, it's not, because I'm a little terrified of skin being taken off and then put back on again.
Ooh.
But, you know, that was their thing. But this was not strange. This was a very normal tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, it wasn't one of the most horrifying things they've ever heard. And that's okay. We grow up with different ideas.
And that's okay. John Rolfe ended up back in Virginia, as we know, with his Orinoco flow. He married a third time, and he died in 1622. But though his marriage and his tobacco enterprise was critical to the success of the colony, he was, as Tony writes, quote, gradually airbrushed from American memory.
Hmm.
But why?
Right.
You know, I'm like, John Rolfe, he seems like a cool American hero. He, like, smuggled these seeds over, and he had a whole business concern he was trying to start, and he's the reason this whole colony started turning a profit. We love turning a profit.
That's true. You'd think we'd learn more about him.
Well, part of the reason is because by the time we started to celebrate Jamestown as a country, most states had banned marriage between Native Americans and white people.
Oh, of course.
And that, of course, made John Rolfe and Pocahontas' story a little awkward.
Mm.
But also, people in Virginia became super obsessed with being able to tie their lineage to Pocahontas and John Rolfe. It's like old money New York being like, my ancestors came over to the Mayflower or whatever, It's like that in Virginia to be like that ancient of a lineage.
Oh, my great-great-great-great-great-grandmother was Pocahontas.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So in 1924, when Virginia passed its Act to Preserve Racial Integrity.
What?
That segregated anyone with any trace of non-Caucasian heritage. They made sure to include a clause exempting white Virginians with, quote, 1/16th or less of Indian heritage and, quote, no other non-Caucasic blood. And this became known as the Pocahontas Clause.
I'm sorry, Virginia did what?
In 1924.
Just a decade before we were causing a real fuss about a whole other group of people being stodgy about racial purity.
Yeah.
We had just come off of it. We were dealing with it ourselves right over here.
Yep.
Act to Preserve Racial Integrity. Gross.
Incredibly gross. And then that they were also like, but let's count how many generations from Pocahontas, and that's as much as you can have.
That's the line.
Of her blood specifically.
Wow.
And it's okay because it makes us look good to have people here from the colonist state. I don't know. It's very weird.
I don't know anyone who cares about anything as much as racists care about race. You know,
right?
Like the bonkers length they go to. It's blowing my mind.
And
every day you learn more about it, and it's like, what? Holy shit. What is wrong in your brain?
A lot.
A lot.
Well, at least one big thing.
But then John Smith was the perfect American hero.
Mm-hmm.
Tony writes, quote, a man of action and dash, self-made, individualistic, iconoclastic, a braggart, a con man, an escape artist, an accomplished killer, scornful of rank and ceaseless in his salesmanship. That's who we want to tell stories about.
We love that guy.
So of course John Smith became the favored figure in this tall tale.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, creating this story of the, quote, good Indian, mm-hmm. who was attracted to Christianity and English customs and society, who fell in love with a white man and preferred his way of life to her own, who foiled her own people's plans in preference for white people, that softened the story of the brutal English subjugation of the natives. So that's, so basically all in all, we can see why the story of Pocahontas and John Smith is the one we've been hearing all these years, mm-hmm. and not
John Rolfe.
Not John Rolfe, or not the whole real story.
Yeah.
Of all three of them and everyone else involved.
Yeah, seriously. And it's, you know, and just, you can see why it kind of feels like Pocahontas is barely a person anymore, because she's been so propagandized by each and every side of the story, where whatever they were trying to do with whatever they were trying to do, they made her story work for it.
Yeah.
And so it's just incredibly difficult to parse out who this woman was. I wish I had a little more information about her likes and dislikes, or what her personality was beyond she was a playful woman, you know, a playful one as a kid.
Right.
And liked to turn cartwheels. And I guess had, you know, sort of an optimistic, cheerful, loving outlook about things.
We hope. Extrapolate, you know.
At least, when she was 9 or at least when she's 10 or 11 or whatever, when they were actually writing about her as a person.
Right.
And when they stopped doing that, it's no one knows. I mean, there's just... It's really sad because, again, this is a real person who really lived and breathed, and she had her own desires and her own goals for her life and for her family, and had 2 to 3 children and didn't get to raise any of them. And it's just frustrating.
Yeah,
it's just frustrating. It makes me want to keep a diary. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't want nobody to tell somebody what I was thinking. I'll tell you what I was thinking.
Don't worry. I'll tell them all what you were thinking in great detail. She thought I was great.
Well, that's true.
Oh, see? I got it right. That's all I know about her. She thought I was great. The
end.
That's
all I need to know. The end.
it is really fascinating to break this down, mm-hmm. to see all these different sides of it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think you go into these like real stories and you're like, oh, well, you know, there's some balance here between these two factions that were fighting over this land, and they were always trying to see common ground, and it wasn't all Percy's.
Mm-hmm.
There were some John Smiths who were like trying to negotiate and make things work out for everyone's in everyone's favor.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath all that, you kind of can't forget that they never should have been here in the first place, claiming it as their own.
Yeah,
because this was a place people already lived. You know, you want to show up in a new country and say like, hey, we've been over here. Do you guys want to talk? Do you want to open some lines of trade? Maybe you guys, some if y'all want to come live over in our land, you can. And maybe some of us can live over here. Like, that's
we'll build an embassy or
normal
something.
Intercontinental trade and open communication. Awesome.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Showing up and saying, hey, this is cool. It's mine now, by the way.
Right. And I know you're a king, but actually you're a subject of my king,
right.
even though you never fucking heard of him.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Very weird.
It's difficult. So happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Anyway, I don't really understand that. And then I will say, like, another reason I really like the book, A Voyage Long and Strange, which we used quite a lot for these episodes as well, is because Tony Horwitz, he follows the trail of the Vikings or the conquistadors or the colonists in history, and then he goes in person today to see and follows the trail today.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of tells you, like, okay, I'm talking to natives now, today, how they are feeling about this. Or I'm talking to white people now, today, who trace their lineage to Pocahontas. Or I'm talking to Swedes who live in Kansas City, and I don't know how they got there, but they're going to tell me, you know?
Right.
And it's really very interesting. And a lot of the natives that he spoke to, particularly about Pocahontas, were just kind of like, you know, another thing that really bothers me about the story of Pocahontas is that it takes away everything about our people beyond they were either stoic and kind and had their arms wide open and were mowed down quickly and gone forever, or they were these brutal, you know, warring nations and, you know, came at them with sticks and got mowed down and that was it. And they're like, you kind of are taking away all of our pomp and our dumbness and all our stupid shit that we're also people, you know, natives are also people. So they had plenty of their own ideas about taking over property or being in charge or falling in love or what, you know, all that. And it does kind of get obscured with like, well, anyway, unfortunately, those traditions are gone because we mowed over a bunch of those people.
Right.
And so now it's just this very narrow view of this whole really rich culture.
Yeah.
So anyway, just another plug for that book. You should read it.
That's cool.
It's very cool.
And I guess in the interest of Thanksgiving, too, like, I do think it's important. We've been critical in this episode of American colonists and all our descendants and, you know, America today and England and what they were doing here and across the world. And that's important. And that doesn't mean, you know, I hate living here so much and everything about it's horrible. Like, that,
no.
It's just important to recognize this so that as you're moving forward, to what degree you can make amends, you do. And to what degree you cannot let these things happen in the future, you do. It just matters. And both of those viewpoints can exist at the same time. You can be like, You can look critically at the racial history of this country in theory. And I think that's really important for us to kind of just keep in our standardized and personal educations.
Right.
You know, because we also have to keep teaching ourselves because as we have learned,
I mean,
history is only so much. And, you know, to public schools credit, there's only so much time in a school year and history keeps getting longer, right? So you can't, there's literally not time in 12 years of school to look at every angle. So I think it's important to, I mean, geez, we're just doing it out of necessity for this job, but it's so cool that we get to go dig up all these other sources. And it really makes me want to spend my free time doing that more. So, you know, your personal education and analysis is just as important.
Yeah. And hopefully some of y'all are listening to this show as your education. Actually,
exactly.
That kind of scares me, but I kind of, it would also be awesome. So
we're doing our best.
We are.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would love to hear your thoughts on both parts of this story.
Yeah.
And maybe, I mean, I'd love to hear what you thought was true before you listened, because I know some people have really educated themselves about the real truth of John Smith, and many people maybe, and I think schools have even changed how they're teaching that story somewhat. And I'm putting a question mark there because I don't know for sure. Probably depends on the school.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I'm very curious to see like what people thought the story was and what they thought was untrue and true about it or whatever, you know, just any of your musings.
I mean, I'll go ahead and set the bar low. I knew nothing. I mean, I literally, like, I knew that the Disney movie was wrong, and that's all I knew.
Yeah.
I knew that she was a lot younger.
Right.
That's pretty much where I came into this from. I was like, Pocahontas, yeah, she married a different guy, and I think she was, like, 12 at first. And that's it.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty much all I knew. So we didn't talk about it in school. I don't think this one came up in our American history class.
No.
Yeah.
I only remember that, like, the one time I didn't do my homework. I always did my homework.
Of course you did.
I was a very...
Nerd.
Yeah.
Nerd
alert.
Nerd,
and I liked my homework, so I did my homework. But mostly, this one time, I did not do it. And the next day, we had like a pop quiz.
Whoops.
And one of the questions was about the story of Pocahontas. And I was straight up like, I guess I'll take the Disney movie out of my brain and put it on here and said, oh, she loved John Smith or whatever. And of course, did not get that question
right.
There
was a raccoon and a hummingbird.
Yep. They were talking...
They didn't talk.
Mel Gibson was in it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Christian Bale.
Yep. But yeah, so I like that red X lives forever in my memory.
I love.
So I knew it wasn't true as a kid, but I'm not sure I ever looked into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love that the one time you didn't do your homework, there was a pop quiz the next day. And to this day, you get anxiety if your work's not done by the end of the day. Probably just because of that.
I'm like, that's going to be the one time I didn't prepare that it matters. It's always the one time you didn't prepare that it matters, by the way.
Not in my experience.
Oh, geez.
I was never prepared.
Well, for some of us,
great.
That's what it feels like.
I was one of those B-minus students because I never, my homework average was zero, but I came in and I rocked those quizzes and tests.
No, I was an A student, but not a teacher's pet. I'll say that. I didn't know how to be a teacher's pet.
English teacher, Mrs. Waters, and I love her and I'll never forget her, pulled me aside one day at the end of the semester and she said, Eli, you are a square peg in the round hole of the public education system. But you have to do it. You're smarter than this. And
yeah,
I did
tried.
A little bit more for a while, and then that fizzled away.
She tried to save your academic career.
I did all right.
Now look at you. You're giving history lessons.
Like, what? Well, I'll just marry a smart girl.
I'll marry an A student, and we'll both find out that it doesn't actually fucking matter later on in life.
We're both
what kind
in the same position. Well, yes, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes.
Especially, I mean, do you have a connection to this story? Or are you 1/16th related to Pocahontas?
Okay, or if you're from any of these tribes, especially if you have any opinion on the Mattaponi oral history or any of that, definitely would love to hear.
Would love to hear. Please get back to us. You can reach us through email at romance@iheartmedia.com.
Mm-hmm. Or on social media, Twitter and Instagram, I'm @DynamiteBoom.
And I'm @OhGreat, it's Eli.
And the show is @RidicRomance.
We are so happy to hear from you all the time. We hope you had a lovely Thanksgiving week. Mm-hmm. And then we're moving into this holiday season. Everybody's having, you know, joy and cheer and all that good stuff.
Yes, and we are so just very thankful for you spending your wonderful free time with us.
We are.
Or your multitasking time.
Right.
or whatever it is you do while you listen to us chat. We just really appreciate you choosing us.
We are. And we're thankful for your neighbors, your uncles, your aunts who listen as well.
Yeah.
And please share this episode and any others around in whatever way you can. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll catch you on the next one.
Can't wait.
So long, friends. It's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.